Saint Maybe. Written by Ann Tyler. Narrated by Eric Michael Summerer.
Chapter 1. The Airmail Bowling Ball. On Waverly Street, everybody knew everybody else. It was only one short block, after all, a narrow strip of patched and repatched pavement, bracketed between a high stone cemetery wall at one end and the commercial clutter of Govan's Road at the other. The trees were elderly maples with lumpy, bulbous trunks. The squat, clappered houses seemed mostly front porch. And each house had its own particular role to play. Number 9, for instance, was foreign. A constantly shifting assortment of Middle Eastern graduate students came and went, attending classes at Johns Hopkins, and the scent of exotic spices drifted from their kitchen every evening at supper time. Number 6 was referred to as the newlyweds, although the Cranes had been married 2 years now and were beginning to look a bit worn around the edges. And number 8 was the Bedloe family. They were never just the Bedloes, but the Bedloe family. Waverly Street's version of the ideal apple pie household. Two amiable parents, 3 good-looking children, a dog, a cat, a scattering of goldfish. In fact, the oldest of those children had long ago married and left, moved out to Baltimore County and started a family of her own, and the second-born was nearing 30. But somehow, the Bedloes were stuck in people's minds at a stage from a dozen years back, when Claudia was a college girl in bobby socks, and Danny was captain of his high school football team, and Ian, the baby, his parents' big surprise, was still tearing down the sidewalk on his tricycle with a miniature license plate from a cereal box wired to the handlebar. Now, Ian was 17, and, like the rest of his family, large-boned and handsome and easygoing, quick to make friends, fond of a good time. He had the Bedloe golden brown hair, golden skin, and sleepy-looking brown eyes, although his mouth was his mother's, a pale beige mouth, quirking upward at the corners. He liked to wear ragged jeans and plaid shirts, cotton broadcloth in summer, flannel in winter, unbuttoned all the way to expose a stretched-out t-shirt underneath. His shoes were high-top sneakers held together with electrical tape. This was in 1965, when Poe High School still maintained at least a vestige of a dress code, and his teachers were forever sending him home to put on something more presentable. But his mother was likely to greet him in baggy, lint-covered slacks and one of his own shirts, her fading blonde curls pinned scrappily back with a granddaughter's pink plastic hair bow. She would not have passed the dress code either. Also, there were complaints about the quality of Ian's schoolwork. He was bright, his teachers said, but lazy, content to slide through with low B's or even C's. It was the spring of his junior year, and if he didn't soon mend his ways, no self-respecting college would have him. Ian listened to all this with a tolerant, bemused expression. Things would turn out fine, he felt. Hadn't they always? None of the Bedloes was a worrier. Crowds of loyal friends had surrounded him since kindergarten. His sweetheart, Cicely Brown, was the prettiest girl in the junior class. His mother doted on him, and his father, Poe's combination algebra teacher and baseball coach, let him pitch in nearly every game, and not just because they were related either. His father claimed Ian had talent. In fact, sometimes Ian daydreamed about pitching for the Orioles, but he knew he didn't have that much talent. He was a medium kind of guy, all in all. Even so, there were moments when he believed that someday, somehow, he was going to end up famous. Famous for what, he couldn't quite say, but he'd be walking up the back steps or something, and all at once, he would imagine a camera zooming in on him, filming his life story. He imagined the level, cultured voice of his biographer saying, "Ian climbed the steps. He opened the door."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?